This is Surfing Through Cinema. I'm your host, Hawaii Harry. Today I'll be discussing the next film for Cinephile Week. From Soviet-era director Sergei Bondarchuk, this epic movie was split into four parts, and today I'll be covering parts 3 and 4 to conclude the series of War and Peace. Okay, so some technical details about War and Peace Parts 3 and 4. The whole project overall was conceived as kind of a counterstrike to the American version of War and Peace starring Audrey Hepburn. And, you know, there was a lot of Soviet pride and excitement around this project. And they tried to get it ready for the 150th anniversary of the French invading Russia, but due to budget constraints and production costs and all kinds of issues that happened during this production, they were unable to make it to that date. In fact, photography didn't even start until the anniversary of the invasion. So, still considered the costliest film of the Soviet Union. Now, many different sources have different reports on how much it would cost now. Some say $700 million, others say $170 million. There's no real clear answer on it, but regardless, it was a very expensive film series. And you can definitely see that. You know, they had costumes from that era, they had guns, they had cannons, they had all the... Basically everything we see in the movie is either a replica of or an actual item from that time period. So they spent a lot of time and effort to make this an epic series. And then the last technical detail, there was a frame-by-frame restoration of it that took over 10 years to produce. Because for many years after the movie, it was only shown on television, which meant it had to be in a 4:3 aspect ratio. And so for many years, people didn't see the original aspect ratio of it. Not until recently, in 2016, was that process completed, and then in 2019, and then Criterion put it onto a disc set. So, very recently has this been seen in its original aspect ratio, and honestly, it needs to be seen in that. There's so many wide-angle shots, especially during the battles, that you kind of miss out on when it's cropped up. Alright, so now I'll get into the plot for parts 3 and 4. In part 3, called 1812, which is the year that the French invaded the Russians, and there's all kinds of crazy battle scenes in this. You know, there's a lot of aerial footage seeing all the cannon fire and all the hills they go up and go down to fight against each other, and it's quite a technical marvel to look at. But it's pretty tragic as well. There's many, many men die on the Russian side. Pierre, who's played by Sergei Bondarchuk, the director, he decides to join the armies and decides to fight. He wants to be a tough man now. And he's in the Battle of Borodino, which is known as a very costly battle for the Russians. And then by the end of the part, Russian forces have no choice but to abandon Moscow. And the French come in and take it over, and in part 4, we'll see what they do as a result of taking it over. We're in part 4, that's named after Pierre, and Moscow has been set ablaze. There's a huge fire going around, many buildings being burnt down, women and children screaming. It's pretty devastating, pretty terrifying. And Pierre's dressed as a peasant, and he's arrested. And he's brought along with the various prisoners that the French have taken, the Russian prisoners. And he witnesses public executions. He escapes from it by some miracle. The French army is ordered to leave Russia and go back to France. So they have to march through a huge winter storm. And then Napoleon passes by his army in his little cart, abandoning them, basically. And the French are very pissed at him, you know, that they're being abandoned by their leader. There's another battle that ensues, and then as a result, they decide to take prisoners back to help them out, because the French were ill-prepared for the harsh Russian cold. And so Andre, who is our main protagonist in part one, the part one is named after him, he's badly injured in this battle. And he's badly injured, I believe, in part three in a different battle. And he's brought to the Natasha Rostova's place, and he forgives her on his deathbed. He forgives her for going against their engagement. And then he slowly seeps into death. And so the war is basically over. You know, the French are gone. And Pierre and Natasha decide to get married. And they go forward helping build up Moscow again. There's a lot of construction work and all that. Kind of symbolizing that they can make it through it. That they could come back stronger than before. Okay, so that's the plot to part 3 and 4 of War and Peace. I'm going to go on a break real quick, but first, here's a message from our sponsor. This podcast is brought to you by Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Here's how. It's totally free. There are tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast from your computer and even your cell phone. But that's not all. Anchor distributes your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many, many more. You could even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. Anchor is everything you need to make a complete podcast all in one small place. So go on and download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today. Okay, so now that we're back from a break, I'm going to get into some critical views, my personal views on part 3 and 4 of War and Peace. So this movie series has a 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Many critics appreciated the design work, the cinematography, the character dialogue, the themes from Tolstoy's book. They felt this is the best adaptation of War and Peace. Many critics too. However, these are more recent reviews. At the time of the release, Time Magazine thought it was okay. They felt that Andre and Pierre were kind of shallow characters. They weren't too interesting. They were too much like the characters in Tolstoy's book. And also they felt the dubbing into English was disastrous. And then another critical point, many Russian critics felt this is the beginning of the restraint on Russian cinema. During the transitional period between the two different Soviet leaders in the 60s. They felt this is more of an example of what happens when the state makes movies versus when artists and filmmakers make movies. They felt this is a very strict, put-together movie and not very artistic enough. Alright, so now I'll get into my personal views. I love Part 3. I think the battle sequences were amazing. The huge scope that the battles were, and all the soldiers and horses and all the effects and stunt work they did, it was incredible. For a very ill-experienced director, this is very, very, very impressive. Because Sergei Bondarchuk, he'd only done, I believe, one other movie before this one, so this is... This movie is amazing. Like, he definitely knew what he was doing. Again, like with the other ones, maybe I don't understand the story of it more. I think if I read the story better, I would understand what was going on. But it was kind of hard, again, to figure out what was going on at some points. It's a very metaphorical film, so if you don't get metaphors very well, like I don't, I had a hard time kind of figuring out what was going on at some at some points. And in part four, it was good and very impressive, but pretty forgettable. Honestly, I had to reread the plot synopsis for this one in particular. I had no memory of what happened in it. It was pretty forgettable. It was nice seeing the Russians having compassion on the French and all of that. I kind of remember that, but after that, I honestly didn't remember what happened. So, I think it's the weakest of the four, which is sad because it's the concluding picture. But Yeah, I kind of wish it was a little bit more engaging. And again, this could be because I don't know much about the story, and I definitely should read it. And then the last personal view of mine, again, Sergei Bondarchuk used a lot of these really experimental camera sequences and movements that were very, very confusing. Especially in the sequence of Andre when he's going in, when he's about to die, you know, he changes his uniform, the room's all white. It's a little confusing of what's going on. You'll figure it out. You're like, oh, because he's dying, right? This is him going into the next life. But there's weird camera techniques and movements that I'm not a huge fan of. But overall, I really liked this movie series. I'm very glad that I decided to watch them, and I own it on Criterion Discs now, so I'm excited to watch them again and having more of an understanding of the storyline. But yeah, those are my thoughts and feelings on War and Peace parts 3 and 4. I think overall the series was pretty good, really well. My wife absolutely loved it. I think it's in her top 10 now, and I want to. Eventually, at some point, I want to watch the Audrey Hepburn version to kind of see the differences and to see why Russia was so inclined to make their own epic scale version of it compared to the 2-hour version from America. Next time, I'll be discussing the next film for Classic Hollywood Week. So, I'm a huge fan of Looney Tunes, and I want to focus on one of their biggest and earliest stars. This episode is all about the Warner Archive disc collection of Porky Pig 101. It has two meanings. There are literally 101 cartoons on these in this collection, but also it's kind of a crash course to understanding the development of Porky Pig as a character and as the major star of Looney Tunes for over a decade. All right, well, until next time, this has been Surfing Through Cinema with Hawaii Harry. Take care. Thank you for listening to Surfing Through Cinema. Make sure to check us out on Facebook at Surfing Through Cinema with Hawaii Harry and on Instagram with Surfing Through Cinema. We also have a website, www.anchor.fm/surfingthroughcinema, where you can learn more details on upcoming episodes and on past episodes.